Hello, this is The Leg Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel #LinuxShow. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
You're listening to The Linux Show. Or maybe you're thinking about it. I don't know. This is probably a commercial. You want to find out about Linux and open source? Check us out at www.linuxshow.com for the best in Linux community news. Check us out.
It's The Linux Show. It is August the 22nd, 2002. We're back with our regular weekly edition of The Linux Show, doing something a little bit unusual, at least for me. Everything else is normal, but for me it's a little unusual. I'm broadcasting tonight live from the MGM Grand here in Las Vegas. We're going to have as our guest during segment number two of this week's edition of The Linux Show a couple of the new executives from the newly renamed Caldera / SCO company, but that will be in the second half of the show. We'll follow our normal format as usual for every Tuesday night. And start off the evening with the hot news of the week. We've got the whole panel here tonight. Arnie is back from his vacation. How are you doing tonight, Arnie?
Oh, pretty good. Allison and I did the tour. Went up past Big Sur, into Napa Valley, across to Reno. Spent the week in Reno, in area, Lake Tahoe, that area. And then we drove down the US 395 back to LA, and I'll just tell you the highlight of the trip was that the drive home. That US 395 is unbelievable.
Oh, I bet it was just wonderful.
Yeah, it goes right through the Sierra Nevadas, and I've never seen mountains like that. That's pretty nice.
And Doc, you're back from your travels to the Midwest this week. How are you doing?
Yeah, I was in Des Moines for GNOME Dex. No relation to the desktop. This is Chris Perillo's Locker Gnome. That's his high school nickname, which has turned into his own major brand. Chris Perillo's on Tech TV and many other things. If you look up Locker Gnome, like LockerGnome, or just look up Gnome Dex, you'll find what he's all about and what the show is all about. It was a lot of fun. One of the most fun shows I've ever been to, actually.
Well, was it covered by Tech TV?
I don't know if it was. It was certainly covered by Chris's whole Locker Gnome Empire thing.
That's quite a crew, isn't it?
Yeah, it is quite a crew. And Leo Laporte, who's with both he and Leo are on Screensavers on Tech TV. And I'm sure they covered it in some way or another. So, because I mean, they couldn't have two of their stars there and let it pass, I'm sure. But there wasn't that much video coverage. They broadcast all of it, I think. On some kind of audio, and it's archived at Locker Gnome. I gave an hour talk about the history or the future of Linux, which is fun, a lot of fun, actually. We ended it up with putting KPIG on a Sharp Zorus and with using Z Radio and putting it over the system, which is fun.
Well, so you got to demonstrate web radio, huh?
I got to demonstrate web radio
on
the only portable client that exists, as far as
the only the owner, only portable client in the universe that we know of, right?
Yeah. Somebody told me there's something on an iPac with that runs on Windows CE, but nobody seemed to know what it was. But everybody seemed to know what the Z Radio on the Zorus was. And
too bad that KPIG is now broadcasting only in real.
Well, it's a stopgap thing.
I hope so.
Yeah, what Rob Glazer told me was that that they made a special project of doing that just to get the KPIG listeners something that wasn't going to scare the KPIG's owners about the whole copyright issue. So
I don't understand what the vehicle for transmission has to do with scaring the owners.
Well, the owners aren't willing to just let KPIG broadcast the way they were. This way. Through the subscription thing, the idea is that the CARP rules get followed somehow. I don't know how, but there it is.
Yeah.
So presumably the $5 that you spend to get KPIG, defrays that in some way.
But then you have to suffer with mediocre quality.
I have no idea. I haven't paid the money, so I don't know.
Well, it's real. I mean,
it won't stand long. Don't worry.
So, yeah, it's a stopgap. You know, they're trying to do a good thing, and I don't want to crap on it. So.
No. Caping's great. It's just that, you know, there's got to be another reason why they chose real. I mean,
because real
is just
them.
A transmission vehicle.
Real came to them. It was voluntary.
It's simple. Yeah, it's simple. Real came to the table.
Real came to the table and said, "You're good guys. How can we help?"
Yep.
That's what it was.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. Also, on the other coast, we've got our East Coast correspondent actually covering the IRC tonight. How you doing, Russ?
Oh, I'm hanging in, I'll tell you. It's joyful out here. The heat's finally breaking, so life is good.
Hey, it was 102 degrees here today in Las Vegas. Hey, but it was a dry heat,
oh,
right?
Oh, that's the key word.
And as usual, Kevin is in the studios in Aurora, Illinois, broadcasting to the known universe, at least the known Linux universe. Feel free to jump into the IRC if you're out there listening and send your questions about the hot stories of the week, or when our guests join us later, send a question through Russ to the IRC, and we'll make sure that they get asked. So,
also, Arnie's on too now. So.
Oh, Arnie, and Arnie's on too. But let's go ahead and get into segment number one, the hot news of the week. And well, we'll defray all the hot news that I'm aware of is coming out of Caldera, a.k.a. SCO. So we'll hold off on that news until the second half of the show. So, Doc, why don't you start us out with news from GNOME Dex?
Okay. It was a really interesting conference. What made it especially interesting to me is that the price of admission was pretty low. You could get in for $99. You had to go to Des Moines. You know, and that's why I think there were a lot of locals.
That's a conference price for $99.
That's a conference. In other words,
just an expo.
Right. And I guess, I'm not even sure. I mean, I just know that if you're, you know, not privileged like we are and can get into these things for free because we're pressed or some other thing like that, and you want to get into a conference and meet some of the kind of people who are there, including me, you know, you're going to have to pay more money. I go to conferences that cost up to more than $3,000 a year that I, you know, may or may not get comped into. Not a year, $3,000 just to show up to a piece of forums like that. And there are other conferences, Internet World and some others that might be $1,000 or more. But to attend everything. But this one was relatively cheap, and you had a kind of an interesting cross section of folks there. One of the nice things about what Chris Perillo does is that he loves all platforms. He sort of started on Windows, but he's got a Linux newsletter, he's got a Mac newsletter, he's got some other newsletters, and he's on Tech TV, and it's kind of like, you know, what fun can we have with any and all of these? And so there wasn't the sort of division among stuff that one tends to find. As a matter of fact, as I was flying in, this is a first for me and probably also a last, I'm sitting on a plane and had no sleep the night before. And I don't sleep well on planes either, and I like looking out the window. So I was sitting there kind of fumbling with a magazine and in my seat by the window, and a woman two seats away from me says to the woman sitting next to her, "Well, Doc Searles will be there." It blew my mind. I leaned forward and I said, "Are you guys going to GNOME Dex?" I said, "Yeah, are you going?" I said, "I'm Doc Searles." They said, "Oh, my gosh." Look at this. The woman who said that was from Microsoft.
Oh, God.
Okay, in Seattle, and is in the little mini PC division, whatever that's called, whatever they're calling it now, is CE or something. And mostly her job is playing with toys, and she's got Linux stuff, and she's got Mac stuff, and she's got Windows stuff, and she was very much not a bigot about anything that Microsoft is doing, and in fact invited me to come to some future thing they have going on up there. So that sort of set the tone for the thing. It was like, you know, we're just trying to have fun here, and we did. A lot of heated conversations about things, definitely. But the most heated one that I was involved in was really about weblogging. There was one guy who works for a huge chemical company, and he thought that corporate weblogs were just never going to happen, and that clue train was a good idea, but, you know, certain big companies are never going to get the clues, something like that. But it was, you know, it was all in good fun. So we had a good time. Just had a good time. And so it was kind of a nice mix of things. And the speech that I gave on Linux was kind of long and covered a lot of territory and ended up kind of in the political GeekPack EFF
area. Good for you.
Yeah, and everybody got very excited about it. And a couple of speakers later was Leo Laporte, who's a great guy and who hosts Screensavers on TV, and pounded home everything that I'd said again, saying that, you know, we're at a time when the entire geek culture is under attack. It's not just the free and open source guys and the people who built the net. It is everybody using the net. Everybody who shares a piece of code or shares a piece of software or shares a piece of music.
Or shares an idea.
And he gave examples from television saying that, you know, he's been working in television. He's more a broadcaster than a geek. And that mentality, you know, that everything is somebody's intellectual property and needs to be protected from the moment it's formed to the moment it gets disseminated everywhere to the end of time is huge in Hollywood and is huge in the television space, and it's seeping like a stain into our territory, and he made a very strong appeal for everybody to help fight it.
Well,
so that was a good thing.
I can certainly tell when you were making your presentations, because it seemed that immediately after you would talk, the GeekPack mailbox would just get flooded with email.
That's good.
Yeah, that's very
good. Well, we're stoking the fires.
Yeah, well, I'd say we probably got, not a huge amount of dollars, but probably about $3,000 worth of pledges.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good. That's good.
That's cool. Well,
yeah. Could do with more of that, so.
It'll go toward helping. And the other thing is that, you know, we're seeing happening right now, we're seeing it a little faster in the weblog space than in some others, but there's
absolutely
a terrific conversation between Larry Lessig, who is no longer delegating his weblog. He's writing it himself and impassioned. It's probably going to make his case of Eldred versus Microsoft. Eldred versus Ashcroft. Ashsoft. on October 9th, even stronger. I think he's getting to spar a bit about stuff, and a lot of stuff's getting thought about that never got thought about before. Interesting stuff going on. And the GeekPack website, which is also a weblog, the AOTC, I should be clear about that, website is in the middle of that, too. Dave Siffrey's done a really good job of moving that into existence, really taking a lead on that.
Yeah, he's been working hard. Very pleased indeed.
Yeah, good guy. Really good guy. I stayed with him when I was at Linux World, and had a really good time. Anyway, so there's just a lot of stuff that's kind of moving right now, and I can feel the political winds shift. I really can. I mean, it's, you know, I have Howard Koval, the co-sponsor of the Berman Bill, happens to represent a district that includes my mother, my sister, and a big pile of cousins, and a really good columnist named Ed Cohn. Look up the name Ed Cohn. Cohn is an august old name from Greensboro. I'm not sure if he's in that family or not, but Cohn Mills was a big old maker of jeans and many other textile products. And so it's, whether he's in that family or not, I don't know, but it's an august name in that town, and he carries some weight, and he is, I mean, one of Koval's people told him privately they were going to rip his face off. And he's played journalistic hardball with him. So the political side of what we're all about is really what's coming to the fore right now. And I feel democracy in motion. It's pretty cool.
Yes, it's an exciting time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and move on. Russ, have you got a hot story for the week for us?
Oh, yeah. This is one of the ones from the It Sucks Ass department. On Slashdot, just posted earlier this afternoon, new MP3 license terms demand 75 cents per decoder. So we suddenly have a situation now where there are patent terms that are now affecting decoders. And as a result, it's been announced that Red Hat has pulled all of the MP3 players from the development version of its software.
Well, this is an I told you so. We knew it was going to happen.
How do you interpret that 75 cents per decoder? I mean, does that mean per user or per developer?
No,
or
that's per instance that a codec is installed in a box.
That's
not a lot of money.
But
no.
it's still, from an open source standpoint,
yes.
It means now there is no such thing as an open source compliant MP3 decoder.
Yeah, MP3, yes, but we still have Oak.
Yes, that's it. So suddenly this is going to be, I hope, a rallying call for all of us to make the switch, because at this point, you know, it's horrible.
Well, we had made the switch actually quite a while ago. Here on our streaming servers, all the links that say MP3 are really Oak streams. We just post them as MP3s so that the people who have MP3 players and aren't smart enough to know the difference will at least click on it, but it's still an Oak stream. So, and it works. We'll get by. Don't worry. Any other stories?
There's an interesting thing. If you go to Linux Weekly News Daily Edition, there is an interesting little reference to an article written on behalf of a Gartner report, but it talks about multiple OS strategies in the years ahead. And the interesting thing is that in the conclusions of this little article, it includes quite a bit about how Linux is going to be a major player, particularly inside the IBM mainframe space, and that Linux will impede the progress of Windows in the mid-range up to at least 16 CPUs during the next 5 years. So even Gartner, which frankly, up until the year 2000, I hadn't read anything from Gartner that I thought was accurate when it came to Linux, even they are coming out and saying that Linux is a force to be reckoned with inside the next 5 years.
Yeah, Gartner's been pretty fair the last 2 years, though.
Yeah, it's they've improved greatly, but it's good to see that a report like this, which puts Linux in a major light for the upcoming years.
Well, that sounds good. Arnie, have you got a story or two for us?
Yeah, there's an interesting article in eWeek this week on fuel cells used for Palm-type devices, mobile computing. And it's a one-page thing. It's on page 23. I'm not sure if it's on the web. Maybe if one of the people in the IRC room will maybe do a search or something that this is what might be, but this is in the print edition of eWeek. And they show a really, really far-out looking piece of equipment that just basically connects to a Palm, a Samsung Palm-type device. And inside are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different, 6 little fuel cells. And that is just what I consider to be just the coolest thing in the whole world. Let's see, they run on some kind of fuel. Let's see, what is it? It's hard. It doesn't even say, I don't think.
Yeah,
typically, they'll run on something like alcohol or something like that.
Kevin knows.
Yeah, I know they were talking about that for laptops, and they were actually going to run on butane lighter fuel.
Okay. And that's why they say that's why they're saying that they're not going to be allowed on might not be allowed on airplanes.
I would hope not. Yeah, but have you seen the new fuel cells at Radio Shack? The solar cells?
No.
For laptops?
No.
Just came out last. Just
are they
out
fuel cells
week.
Or are they solar cells? Wait.
They're solar cells.
Okay, so they're not fuel cells.
They're solar cells, $49.95, and will power your laptop, or if you hook them up into the cigarette lighter of your car, it should recharge your battery in about 6.5 hours.
Oh, man.
On a sunny day.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Very cool stuff.
there are nothing but sunny days here, so.
Well, where you are, you live in a desert.
There's nothing but sun here. But I found that really interesting because this is something that certainly has been a hot topic on Slashdot for quite a while, and fuel cells coming of age, and they're just going to get better and smaller. And this device is like the size of a deck of cards, and it can power last 10 times longer than standard lithium-ion batteries. Very interesting. The other thing I saw this week that was kind of really cool, and you have to understand, I was pretty much out of circulation for the last week. We were running around the country. But there's a lot of talk about Red Hat being the next Redmond again and next Microsoft, and that's someone's worried. eWeek has written an article about that. And that's just completely ludicrous. I have not been a great fan of Red Hat in my history, but I have to defend Red Hat. They've done a really phenomenally good job, and I don't for a minute think that they're out to control Linux. I think they have long since realized that Linux is something not something that one person can control. And I think eWeek is here again being totally clueless as to what Linux is all about. And
that's
article's ridiculous. The article's ludicrous and just in typical eWeek style. It's just it's just so much blather.
Okay, Kevin, do we have a new release report for this week?
Nothing terribly interesting so far. I was actually going to mention the MP3 story, but.
Sorry.
Another couple points on that is that not only is it 75 cents per decoder, but it's also a minimum of $15,000 a year.
Oh, they don't talk about that.
Minimum of $15,000 for whom?
For whoever's any manufacturer who wants to license the decoders.
Oh, so if it's the creator of the codec.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wonder what Lame's going to do.
Well, Lame's not a decoder, so they're already violating the patent.
Yeah.
But it's not actually a decoder, it's just...
it decodes, too.
It's a demo of how you would build one. It's not an actual encoder. If you read the documentation.
That makes it sound even worse. $15,000, that really hurts the little guys. That's a lot of money for the little guys. Okay, well, we are up to 27 after the hour. We're going to take a short break, about 4 minutes, and come back with the second half of the Linux Show for tonight. A little quick update, follow up on the comments I was making last week about a potential upcoming guest. It has been officially confirmed now. We will be having Will Wheaton, a.k.a. Wesley Crusher from Star Trek Next Generation, joining the show within the next 3 weeks. And I will post on our website as soon as his press agent has a firm date lined up for him. He's madly trying to learn Linux before he comes on the show. He doesn't want to embarrass himself. And I've also... got some news that will be coming up next week, where we will have another guest, but this time it's a real live, honest to goodness astronaut from NASA, who will be scheduling a visit on the Linux Show within the next few weeks. So, big news in at least in the space industry coming up on future shows. So, Kevin, go ahead and put on a tune. Let's take a short break. Listen to some. Commercials, thank our sponsors for supporting the ongoing efforts here of the weekly edition of the Linux Show. We'll be right back, everybody.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsors who make the Linux Show possible. I'd like to thank VA Linux. Oops, no, they're not VA Linux anymore. They are now VA Software. Hope they don't change their name again pretty soon. I'm going to have to make another commercial. But check out VA Software and learn all about the SourceForge development platform for internal company development projects, or if you're just a little guy but want to get a flavor of it all, check out sourceforge.net and spread the word on open source development platforms.
for the Linux Show for August the 27th, 2002. We're halfway through the Linux Show, jumping to segment number two. Again, I'd like to thank our sponsors for making our show possible. Make sure that you listen to the commercials when they rarely do happen, and visit their websites and buy their stuff, and make sure that the Linux Show stays on the air, continuing on. Hopefully, who knows, a little bit more political intrigue down the road, and we might even get the last couple of years of archives back online for you to listen to. We know we're getting plenty of emails from you all out there asking us to put the archives back up, but right at the moment, we just cannot do it with the CARP regulations in place the way they are. It would literally bankrupt us to do that. So until then, we just keep supporting our sponsors. So let's go ahead and jump into segment number two. As I said at the top of the show, I'm here in the press room of the MGM Grand Casino. Very beautiful hotel, Emerald Tower it is called. And I am the guest, or at least I thought I was the guest of Caldera. A couple hours into the event, though, all of a sudden they changed the name of the company, and it has really screwed up all of my paperwork, because I've had to go through and white out all of the Calderas and put in SCO. But I've got a couple of people here joining me tonight. I've got Reg Broughton. Did I see it right, Reg?
Yes, very close.
Senior VP of Worldwide Operations of the new SCO Group. Also joining us is Opinder Bawa, Senior Vice President of Technology of SCO. So welcome, gentlemen, to the Linux Show. I know you're both first-time guests. This is a very relaxed show, very informal. Jump in. Feel free to step on anybody on the panel. If you don't like what they're saying, cut them off. But we'll go ahead and get the conversation rolling. There is an awful lot of...
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here.
Well, welcome. Welcome. There's an awful lot of knee-jerk reaction on websites like Linux Today, Slashdot, a few others, in terms of just the gut reaction that people had of you changing the name from Caldera to back to SCO, I suppose. Why don't you just give us a brief explanation of what the major corporate motivations behind the name change were?
Okay, well, I'll take that one. This is Reg. Good evening, everybody, or good afternoon, wherever everybody is. The reason for the name change is really quite straightforward. Our new CEO, Dahl McBride, felt very strongly that there was a lot of brand equity in the term SCO, and that on balance, especially outside of the U.S., where the company name Caldera isn't as well known and SCO is much better known, that this would be a way to reinvigorate the company and take us forward into a new era, a sort of a rebirth, a reinvigoration, a re-energizing of the company. And so the decision was made that we would rebrand ourselves and rebrand our technologies as SCO, a very well-known brand.
Now, this is an event that is attended by people who have had a history with supporting SCO and Xenixware types of products. And so I would have anticipated a positive response, but I never would have anticipated the depth of the emotion of the positive response.
Yes,
were you caught off guard by how apparently elated, overjoyed? I really don't know what adjective other than that to use of the SCO people. They were really happy.
Yeah, let me just remind everybody that this show we're at is called Forum, and Forum has been an event which has been around in SCO history way back for many, many years, always in Santa Cruz. This time we moved it here to Las Vegas, and we knew when we had our company town hall meeting at the end of last week and announced the change that there was going to be, we expected rather that there would be a positive response. And we know you're absolutely correct. You know, we have a lot of the old SCO, the traditional SCO channel partners are all here, and so we expected a good response. It was a bit bit over the top. We were surprised just how we got a standing ovation when the announcement was made. So I guess there was a strong feeling that perhaps in the last year that the combination of Caldera and SCO had somewhat disenfranchised some of the original SCO partners, and so I think they felt very good about what we said.
I happen to be sitting next to David. I, for some reason, can't remember his last name. He's from Net++, one of your really old partners. And this was his 16th consecutive year of attending the event.
Extraordinary.
He was absolutely in tears over the changes that were made. So at least he was pleased.
Yeah.
Well, I think everybody said the standing ovation actually caught us off guard. That was great.
Yeah.
And it was spontaneous. But let me say straight away, because I think it's very important to make sure everybody understands this is a Linux show, that going back to SCO, one of the questions I got asked many times by the press interviews I had was, oh, does this mean that you're giving up on Linux and that SCO is really a Unix company? And the answer is absolutely not. We are totally committed to Linux. We have a strategy of going forward with United Linux. We have a Linux product in the field, Open Linux. And there's certainly no taking away from our belief that Linux is a very important operating platform going forward. So let me make that absolutely clear, because I know that's one of the reactions that we get is that SCO is a Unix company. We're not. We're a Linux and a Unix company.
Well, Linux and Unix being basically two variants of the same thing.
Sort of, I guess, yes. I mean, in fact, as far as we're concerned, when we look at our solutions marketing and we look at our channel, they're all small business partners. They sell to small businesses. And we have a day tomorrow when we are having a full day of training, for hands-on training, for about 100 of our partners. And the training is all about replacing Microsoft in the back office, using Linux as an infrastructure server, having a mail and messaging capability on it. And within a week of announcing a full day of training, an 8-to-5 training day here at the MGM Grand at this show, we had 100. We filled the 100 seats within just a few days. So we found that there's a tremendous interest from our channel in terms of how do we deploy Linux, how do we make this a success and make money at putting Linux into the back office as an alternative to a Microsoft server.
Also put Linux in the front office as an alternative to a Microsoft desktop.
We're less desktop-oriented, perhaps, than in fact, we got asked that question in the Q&A. Was, what are you going to do about Linux on the desktop? Our initial thrust is Linux as a server. Clearly, we're going to have a desktop, a workstation derivative product, especially for developers and for that part of our community. But a lot of our new products, Evolution Messaging Server, which is an Exchange mail messaging product, they're essentially server-based products. And United Linux, which is our Linux strategy going forward, that's all about initially a server platform, a Linux server platform.
What about the United Linux? Where does that fit in?
United Linux, as you know, is a consortium of four companies, ourselves, Caldera, and now SCO, SUSE out of Germany, Connectiva out of Brazil, and our friends Turbo Linux over in Japan. And essentially, United Linux as a consortium is building a Linux distribution, and SUSE is the integrator. They're the company that's building the distribution. We're in beta right now on this distribution. It'll be released in November. And for us, for SCO, it'll be SCO Linux powered by United Linux. It'll be the follow-on technology from the Caldera Open Linux 3.1 product that we currently have in the field and we're currently selling and supporting.
Why do we need a United Linux? I mean, what's the rationale behind that particular?
I think we need to look at it from both sides. From our standpoint, the rationale was fairly straightforward. We were four companies. We were all spending a lot of resource developing our own separate distributions. I think we all felt that if we came together and developed a single distribution to which ISVs and IHVs would certify, that would actually be beneficial for the market, for us, and for our ability to get to market with better products and better services. For the customer side, I think that's the key. The key to the channel partners here and to our accounts that we've talked to is that there is a single alternative platform to Red Hat Linux which the Oracles and the IBMs and the Intel, HP, all these companies are here with us at the show, and all of them have CA, they've all endorsed United Linux as a platform that they will certify to, and that's going to make it much easier for the developer community, going to make it much easier for our customers to deploy solutions based upon either ourselves or most likely Red Hat Linux. We anticipate that we would be, these two Linuxes would be the two main distributions in the commercial world from here on in.
Oh, how about Debian?
Well, Debian is very popular in the developer community, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But we don't find ourselves competing with Debian. We find ourselves competing with Red Hat if there's a Linux decision going on.
I would have to agree with that.
Right.
Yeah. It was an inevitability that something like United Linux was going to come into the picture with the, I hate to use the word tier two companies because I don't want to insult you.
Well, I think
but,
it's a fair
but
consolidation.
The fact is that when you're talking about commercial, the vast majority of commercial installations right now have been Red Hat. And for the other companies to stay in the game, you've got to use your money smart.
Absolutely. There's a strong financial reason for the four companies to come together. And I think it will be genuinely beneficial to the Linux community because we have the power of four companies combining their engineering assets, combining their total assets to produce a first-class Linux distribution.
Yeah, this may be putting you on the spot because it may be too soon for you to really comment yet, but with the changes at Turbo, is it clear, really, what role they're going to take in United Linux?
Yeah, I can clear that up, actually. It is clear. Turbo Linux in Japan is now part of a company called SRA, which is a large Japanese systems integrator. The COO and president was previously the general manager of Turbo Linux, and that gentleman came to the United Linux CEO meeting just a couple of weeks ago and re-endorsed, and they made it very clear, they restated very, very clearly that not only are they part of the United Linux Consortium, but they've already begun the work to integrate the Asia-Pacific language requirements and localization requirements into the United Linux, the next distribution. So, and that was one of the main, if you like, added values, and one of the main engineering tasks of Turbo Linux was to do the double byte support for United Linux.
Yep.
And the engineers are working on it, and they're integrated with the SUSE engineering. So yes, they've completely committed to continuing with United Linux. But that's Turbo Linux Asia. That's the Japan, China, Korea, Asian Turbo Linux company as part of SRA.
I'd like to jump in with a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
One is, and I think it's really straightforward. I'm looking at two different reports, one that shows SCO's annual revenues at $40 million, another one shows it at $70 million. Both are comparable to Red Hat, and I'm wondering which is right, and if you guys could set us right on that.
Well, actually, they're both, well, that's interesting.
I was told 60.
They're both wrong, yeah.
No, I did hear Daryl say that $60 million was a goal.
Yes.
And I didn't hear what the actual was.
And I guess the reason why somebody might think it was $70 million is if you took the last four quarters, it would probably add up to $70 million. But if you take the run rate, we're anticipating our financial year, and we're just beginning our Q4. August is the first month of our Q4. Then we're anticipating that this financial year, the $60 million is our target. And the reason is that, as you know, SCO had a very excellent year in 1999-2000, mainly because of Y2K and some of the other things that were going on. But the revenues have slipped during the last five or six quarters. And since the combination of SCO and Caldera, which was in May of 2001, the couple of quarters there were revenues were higher than they are today. We, at our last financial review just a quarter ago, we anticipated our look forward statement was $14 to $15 million in revenue. The upper end there is $15 million. Multiply that by four, run rate equals $60 million. We have a financial analyst review tomorrow morning. There's a conference call which Dahl and Bob Bench, our CFO, are on, and we'll be announcing some positive news in our revenues, and I think the number of 60 million as a good target for this year is the right number.
Okay, that's one thing. The other thing is there was a sort of common wisdom a year or two ago that the success of Linux was going to be at the expense of companies like SCO, that it wasn't really going to succeed at the expense of Microsoft, but really eat into these other companies. That appears not to have been the case. Tell me a little more about what actually has gone on there and about the synergies. Going. You covered that a little bit already, but what I'm looking to do is get a sense of how we recalibrate the way that Linux is going to work side by side, not only with SCO, the traditional SCO, SCO Unix rather, but the AIXs and HPUXs and Solarises of the world, and the difference within SCO between what it's doing to unite these two forms of Unix and what's going on within IBM, Sun, and HP.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know much about. We can speculate on what's happening in Sun, HP, and IBM. I can tell you what's going on and what has gone on in the SCO world and the Caldera world. What we found is, as you suggested at the beginning of that comment, that Linux isn't taking away our Unix business. And in fact, most of our channel partners and our major accounts are looking at Linux and typically looking at new deployments or looking at infrastructure, file and print or web service or application service for the future and things like mail and messaging. But actually, our Unix business is still extremely strong. And so our experience so far is that, no, Linux is not taken away from our Unix business. You would have expected it because SCO is Unix on Intel. And, of course, that means that unlike Sun, that goes for a proprietary Spark, Solaris 9-type solution, they would sell Solaris 9 on an Intel machine to the developer community to develop applications to deploy on their hardware because they're driven by hardware revenues. And we are driven by hardware revenues, of course, so you'd expect us to be a target. But despite all of the uptake of Linux, that hasn't been the case. And many of our larger accounts, I don't know if you know, but we have a very substantial base in the retail and replicated site business. NASDAQ, Goodyear, Eckerd's, Kmart, McDonald's are all major account customers. None of these customers are looking at replicated deployments on Linux at this point. What they are looking at, however, is things like new age point-of-sale terminals with a small footprint Linux. They're looking at handheld tablets and other devices, which would be driven by Linux. They're looking at Linux in non-business critical environments, like I said, as file and print servers. They all have Linux in their shops somewhere, but not replacing, for instance, the pharmacy application, which is run on a SCO Unix machine.
Mm.
Now, what's going on here?
I don't entirely accept.
So what you're saying is, if I get this right, that there are there's a lot of momentum behind all of these really dedicated vertical applications that SCO has been serving for some time.
Absolutely.
And that continued development in that environment is what the customers want and what you're going to do going forward.
Absolutely. One of our announcements yesterday, one of our press releases, talked about the roadmap for the three operating systems that SCO supports. And we talked a lot here about our two Unix operating systems, SCO Open Server and SCO UnixWare. And there was, I think, a lot of the applause, a lot of the reaction was to the absolute statement that Dar McBride made, which is that these operating systems are not going away today, tomorrow. They're not, what was the term he used? They're not going into the museum or something. We're not driving this into the museum. This has a roadmap going forward for many years. And we have commitments in some of our accounts for many years on these operating systems. Now, I have to say that, there are leading-edge customers and there are trading-edge customers. And I think if you look at many of our replicated retail and replicated branch sites, they're typically a trading-edge companies. These are not companies that are going to lead with bleeding-edge technology as they view it at this time.
That's good.
So, but we do have a lot of interest. I mean, as I said, the interest from our channel in Linux is very high, and the minute we announced, as I mentioned earlier on, we announced some Linux training, we're full up. So, which is very, very gratifying, of course.
Is that it, Jack?
Yeah, that was it. I only wanted to jump over something there, but that's okay. That's good. It seems to me that there's a pattern that's sort of emerged, which is, and I think we've seen it. It's you've articulated it far more than anything I've heard coming out of those other three companies I mentioned. In part because Linux is sort of hip in those places, and in yours it's a little bit different, I think. We don't hear much about what they've been doing for the old customers running the old operating systems and what synergies there may be within the company between those. In fact, what I've heard from IBM is that there's a bit of a rivalry going on. And for all I know, that might be the case with SCO as well. I don't know. But
we try not to. In fact, a lot of, if you look at our tagline, Powerful Choices, what we've been trying to articulate is to say, when you're ready, we will be there. When you're ready to make a change, when you're ready to move off that stable Unix platform you've been on, and you want to deploy a Linux-based application, then we're ready to be there with United Linux. So we're trying to because we're only an operating system company, we don't have hardware. I think it's really significant. You talk to IBM, they say, "Oh, we've $400 million worth of business on Linux," and the IBM keynote at Linux World last week, very interesting, all about the IBM platforms on which Linux runs and what a great community we all are in the Linux world. And yet I would suspect that most of that is hardware revenue. I mean, I'm not sure that IBM is actually making a lot of money out of the software revenue, and in fact they definitely downplay that to a large extent.
Well, it does bring up a question. I mean, what is there a difference in what you charge for your United Linux-based OS and for UnixWare and for
Server?
Yeah.
We haven't announced the pricing on United Linux yet. We are going to announce that a little bit closer to first customer ship, which is November of this year. It will be a chargeable product. Red Hat has set a bit of a bar there by talking about having advanced server and public domain is the pricing is in the public domain. So we consider United Linux distribution as being an equivalent to advanced server, and we will continue to take United Linux forward, do a lot of technology advance, and Binder may have some information on that to talk about. But certainly from a market standpoint, it is a chargeable product. It won't be we won't charge the same way as we do for some of our UnixWare technologies. We also have source licensees for UnixWare. We have a number of large-scale OEM opportunities and deals that we take with UnixWare in the telcos, and you'd be quite surprised where our Unix is deployed. It's deployed in vast numbers in Avaya and Lucent, for example. Unisys is a big OEM. We have a number of other avenues that we take Unix to.
Well, in the last few remaining minutes that we've got, I'd like to mention a comment that, well, you're only a operating system company, but
that's not entirely true.
At least based upon one of the announcements this week, you literally shocked the hell out of me when you brought the gentleman, Jim, from Vista. John Wall from Vista.com to announce your SCO Biz service. I'm still sort of shocked by you going into the AST business. It's a complete departure for anything that you've ever done in the past. And can you give us a little bit of an idea as to what was the motivation? I know it was partner-driven. You were trying to give something to your partners to sell, but what was the overall motivation behind offering a service like SCOBIZ?
I'm going to let Pinder take this one because he hasn't had a chance to speak.
It's only a testament to your valuableness, that you, Reg. I think there's a certain element of the new culture within our company, and that is we're trying to pay a lot more attention to what our customers want and what our partners are looking for. And one of the things they communicated very well to us was that they just don't want products from us. They don't just want infrastructure products. they're looking for, this is a very complicated world that's getting a lot more sophisticated, which is to say that, for example, even SMB clients, small customers are looking for CRM-type applications, a sophisticated way of running their business. So when we spoke with some of our customers and partners, it was clear that they were looking for solutions from us as opposed to just products. And as we dive into what solutions look like, feel like for the SMB partners, we found that they are looking for security solutions, for CRM solutions, for automated web systems management, for areas that you know, we may not have thought about earlier, which is applications integration, for example, is another space. So we're working our way through understanding what customers are looking for, how sophisticated the SMB marketing is getting, the SMB market is getting, and what type of solutions make sense for our company to provide. Either we build the product ourselves, or there's a fantastic amount of great technology out there that doesn't have a channel, doesn't have a way of getting out to these partners, and that's what we're trying to enable. It's about choices.
I might just jump in and mention that Vista.com, which is the company that we partnered with to have this exclusive arrangement for, it's like an e-commerce web-based ASP model. And, of course, they're all based on Linux.
Yep.
To say.
Yep.
So the whole their hosting site is all Linux-based, which is also outstanding. But, yeah, well, it is a bit of a departure. And Dahl has done that. Dahl McBride, as our new CEO, came in and said, well, we're going to shake this up. We're going to do some new things. We're still consistent with our operating system platforms. They're very important. We still have some Volution messaging and some other Linux-based middle-tier technologies, but we need new-age e-commerce enabling technologies to get to the SMB, because that's what our channel partners want to be able to go sell. And then we have the link back to the OSs because of the ability to API between the two environments. So if you enable a small business partner with this e-commerce ASP, you can then export information out of the ASP back into your Open Server application, for example, if it's an accounting back office application or that sort of environment. And that's a very interesting way to link the two together.
Mm-hmm. With SMB, again, is small, medium business, or...?
Yes.
Yes, small to medium business, yeah. Most of our resellers are less than 10 people themselves, and most of their customers are less than 10. So, 10 to 50 people companies, you know, very small business. That's really where we have huge foothold because of the history of scope.
There's a whole lot of business down in that area.
Yeah, there is. Sure. We've got people laugh at. We say we have 16,000 resellers, and people say you can't have 16,000 resellers. Well, we do, and we can, and it's not tough to have 16,000 small business resellers around the world who are selling small business solutions on Unix or Linux to their local customers, the local businesses, the local doctor's office, the local chiropractor's office, the local hardware store. This is where we are well known.
And those companies are highly productive,
mm-hmm.
and highly profitable, and can be. I mean, doctor's offices, I always thought the medical field was a great, great place to sell computers.
Absolutely. And what the doctor wants is a patient records management application
that works
there and
reliable.
Never breaks down with four terminals. And that is exactly where we're strong and exactly where we'll go with Linux over time.
It's a perfect place for it, too.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, well, we are at 3 minutes after the hour, so we're at the end of another show. Reg and Upinder, I'd like to thank you for joining us this week on the Tuesday night edition of the Linux Show. We're going to be watching with great interest at the evolution of the new SCO, and so we'd probably like to have you back in about 6 months to update us on the progress that you've made, because frankly, I think I'm not one to pull punches. I think some of the things that you're doing this week are gambles, but change is good, risk is good. You don't progress without taking risk, that's for damn sure. So we'd love to have you back in about 6 months to get it.
We appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, we'd love to be back. That's great. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Well, on behalf of the entire panel here at the Linux Show, this has been a lot of fun. We'll be back same time next week, and hopefully we'll have an update on some of our
science shows that we've been promising everybody the last couple of weeks. So we're out of here, everybody. See you next.